Radio.
Science and the Mind of God. A new springtime for the Christian view of cosmic history. A presentation by Mr. Robert Van Gend at the Christopher Dawson Center for Cultural Studies 2015 Colloquium.
Thank you very much, Carl. I've actually tinkered with the title of this talk a little bit to make it Ideas with Cultural Consequences, but it'll still be covering the new interpretation by some Christian and agnostic scientists of cosmic history and how that sits well with the Christian worldview. One important insight I took away from my Campion Liberal Arts degree was that ideas have consequences. In Understanding the Present, Science and the Soul of Modern Man, Brian Appleyard investigates the cultural consequences of the replacement of the Aristotelian physics with the mechanical Newtonian physics. The Aristotelian world understood final causes or purposes to be part of an explanation of a substance. But in the new science, in Newton's science, only mechanical causes were of interest. No longer did a planet orbit the sun because of a transcendent moral order. The planet seeks now mechanical equilibrium just like all other matter. So Newton sparked the idea that nature could be completely explained through mechanical causes. The universe was a big machine. Everything in Newton's world was to be explained in terms of matter bumping into or attracting other bits of matter. Laplace, after explaining the fine-tuning of the planet's orbits with only the laws of nature, said of God, "I have no need of that hypothesis." The dazzling mathematical power of science, and later its impressive technological fruits, would progressively, I quote Appleyard, exclude all possibility of competition, of alternative explanation. What must never be forgotten, though, stresses Appleyard, is that it was a choice. We adopted a particular perspective, a perspective which, to Newton, would have only been half the picture. The other half would have been the spirit world. The scientific perspective necessarily ignores the world of value, which is outside its sphere of competence. The idea that the scientific perspective gives us the full picture of our world has had consequences for our present culture. The assumption now is that nothing in the realm of non-science is real and objective, and all we have is our own subjective experience that we can cut to the shape we like. Everything is the product of blind chance and necessity, according to Dawkins and other atheists, and there is no point expecting there to be any meaning or objective values in a blind universe out there. We are disconnected from any reality external to ourselves. We no longer strive after transcendent values like beauty, goodness, and truth, but are subjected to such shabby and accidental artworks as Tracy Emin's bed, which she insists is beautiful to her. But I don't know anyone else who would agree. Nietzsche saw with great clarity the cultural situation of modernity. "God is dead," he wrote, "and we have killed him." Nietzsche drew the full consequences of the decline of belief in God. If God is acknowledged not to exist, then there are no grounds for holding to traditional morality. It's up to each to invent his own morality, his own truth, if he likes, in the cold and godless universe. "Man," writes the 20th century French biologist Jacques Monod, "at last knows he is alone in the unfeeling immensity of the universe out of which he has emerged by chance." And so we are left in a desolate, meaningless universe as our home. Is that the last word? Or are there ideas out there now that might return the culture to an era when we perceive the universe as shot through with signs of mind and meaning? The former professor of fundamental physics at Cambridge University, John Polkinghorne, who discovered one of the quarks, looks at the same scientific phenomena that led Monod to despair, but sees them with different eyes. That is because he, as an ordained Anglican priest, along with a collection of agnostic scientists and philosophers, agree with physicist James Jean that the universe is starting to look more like a great thought than a great machine. They look at the same physical universe that Monod looked at, but don't see the same blind chance and necessity at work. What all scientists agree is that in the beginning, the universe was an almost smooth expanding ball of energy. It was much simpler than the universe is today, which is now full of complex systems like galaxies and the most complex known system, us. The early expansion was not completely smooth. There were ripples here and there, which meant that there was more matter in some places than others, and more matter accumulated more gravitational attraction, which had a snowballing effect over a billion years to create a lumpy universe full of galaxies and stars. The ripples that led to galaxies and stars, rather than a perfectly smooth and uninteresting universe, were chance, happenstance, historical contingency. Gravity was the law that augmented the chance event. This interplay between chance and necessity is characteristic of the evolution of complex systems in cosmic history. Another case of this interplay between chance and necessity is closer to home. It's the biological evolution of complex beings like us. Chance mutations occur from time to time that are rejected or preserved by the process of natural selection. As best we understand, nothing new or complex could develop if these chance mutations didn't occur, and nothing new would be preserved if the new genetic information couldn't be transmitted. Chance and necessity. In Polkinghorne's eyes, chance is the novelty, is the engine of novelty. Necessity is the preserver of fruitfulness. Within lawful limits, there is space in cosmic history for novelty, which he thinks is consonant with the idea that it is the expression of the will of a creator, subtle, patient, and content to achieve his purposes by the slow unfolding of a process inherent in those laws which in their regularity are but the pale reflections of his abiding faithfulness. So instead of Monod's nihilistic interpretation of chance and necessity that sees the universe without meaning or purpose, Polkinghorne interprets the interplay between chance and necessity as indicators of the Creator's gift of independence to the world and of his faithfulness. But what justification is there for such an interpretation? Well, since the 1970s, a school of thought has developed among scientists that the necessity element, that is, the laws of the universe, should not be described by the pejorative word blind, since the universe's laws seem to be deliberately fine-tuned to support carbon-based life. In this school of thought, ours is a very special universe. Most combinations of laws would just produce sterile universes, but ours looks fine-tuned to allow for the astonishing complexity of life to emerge. The laws are tightly knit. They are related to each other in a delicate balance and set to precise values that make possible the evolution of carbon-based life from the physical fabric of the world. Right up to the complexity of self-conscious rational creatures, or anthropoi. This includes human beings, but would likewise apply to any self-conscious rational creature elsewhere in the universe, loosely termed anthropoi. This is called the anthropic principle. An example of the tightly knit laws. If the initial expansion of the Big Bang was too fast, it would quickly become diluted before anything interesting could happen. If it expanded too slowly, though, it would collapse back in on itself before anything interesting could happen. It also needed to expand quite smoothly because if there were large irregularities, that would cause destructive turbulence. However, it couldn't expand too smoothly or it wouldn't be able to have it wouldn't be able to evolve the lumpiness which was necessary for stars and galaxies, and which are, of course, necessary for life. For stars, here's another example of the fine-tuning. For stars to be stable, long-burning sources of light and heat that make life on nearby planets possible, the fundamental forces of gravity and electromagnetism must have a delicate balance. If the balance is slightly off, stars will become too cool to support life, or they will overheat and burn out in a few million years, sorry. But that is much, much too short a time for anything complex like life to evolve. Another fundamental force, the strong nuclear force, is critical to the creation of carbon within stars, a necessary element, obviously, in the creation of carbon-based life. Carbon is made when three helium nuclei are joined together. Now, this is impossible to do without a special resonance existing at just the right frequency. And lo and behold, the resonance does exist at exactly the right frequency. And this is made possible by the fine-tuning of the strength of the strong nuclear force. And these are just a few of the fine-tuned processes that are critical for life to evolve. Philosopher John Leslie, in his book Universes, spends a good few pages just listing examples of fine-tuned processes that are necessary for life. Polkinghorne says that his colleagues feel particularly uneasy about the delicate balances required by the anthropic principle, as though it is too much to put down to coincidence. They are challenged by the idea that the interplay between chance and necessity is not blind after all. Polkinghorne prefers to call them happenstance and lawful regularity instead of chance and necessity. Within these simple, fine-tuned laws of matter, there is, I quote, an astonishing potentiality capable of being explored by the processes of chance and necessity. The lawful regularity is the boundary within which a universe can explore the inherent fruitfulness of these laws through the shuffling of happenstance. Arthur Peacock likens the action of chance in the elaboration of complex life to a composition of J.S. Bach. He says, thus does J.S. Bach create a complex and interlocking harmonious fusion of his seminal material, both through time and at any particular instant. In this kind of way, might the Creator be imagined to unfold the potentialities of the universe which he himself has given it. The finely tuned universe challenges the nihilistic vision of chance and necessity. The only way, says Polkinghorne, that a hot soup of elementary particles can become the home of saints and scientists is because some very delicate balance of laws and set of initial conditions was met, endowing the simple fundamental laws with astonishing potential. Chance, in this view, is not as blind as it seems. The agnostic Australian cosmologist Paul Davies isn't sure exactly what it all means, but he is sure that it isn't meaningless. He says, I belong to the group of scientists who do not subscribe to a conventional religion, but nevertheless deny that the universe is a purposeless accident. Through my scientific work, I have come to believe more and more strongly that the physical universe is put together with an ingenuity so astonishing that I cannot accept it as a mere brute fact. There is a second insight of the deep rationality of modern science that is a further reason to think that there is more meaning to the universe than meets the eye. As the physicist Sir James Jean said, the universe begins to look more like a great thought than a great machine. After recognizing signs of mind in the universe, Antony Flew, the famous atheist philosopher of the 20th century, wrote a book called There Is a God. He says, I now believe that the universe was brought into existence by an infinite intelligence. I believe that this universe's intricate laws manifest what scientists have called the mind of God. Why do I believe this, given that I have expounded and defended atheism for more than half a century? The short answer is this. This is the world picture, as I see it, that has emerged from modern science. Flew echoed the great agnostic Jew, Albert Einstein, who said, "Certain it is that a conviction akin to religious feeling of the rationality or intelligibility of the world lies behind all scientific work of a higher order. This firm belief, a belief bound up with deep feeling in a superior mind that reveals itself in the world of experience, represents my conception of God." Far from looking like a mindless, purely material universe, our universe is shot through with signs of a rational mind. Both Flew and Einstein were convinced that the mind of God is the reason for the rational character of our universe. The more interesting point, though, is that the rational character of our minds mirrors this rational character and structure of the universe. Polkinghorne puts it like this. There is this remarkable congruence between our inward thought and the outward way things are. So first, to the outward way things are. Modern science has probed the universe from the very largest galaxies to the smallest subatomic particles and quantum fields. The findings? A universe that is saturated with reason. There are laws that explain the behavior of the physical world as deep down as we look. Einstein said, "Whoever has undergone the intense experience of successful advances in this domain, science, is moved by profound reverence for the rationality made manifest in existence, the grandeur of reason incarnate in existence." Laws of nature are like instruction sets mysteriously imprinted in the very being of all things. They are universal and explain phenomena at every level of the physical world, even in the unpicturable quantum world. Even in that world, particles and larger objects in the macroscopic world seem to obey laws. These laws are built into the fabric of the physical universe. Paul Davies, the agnostic Australian scientist, likens them to computer software. They are the immaterial program that directs the physical universe. Now, these instruction sets aren't immediately obvious to us. We can all observe apples fall to the ground, but we can't observe immediately that the apples fall according to Newton's inverse square law of gravitation. To observe this, we must interrogate nature more deeply, drawing on existing theories, which are expressible in mathematics, about nature's behavior. Einstein's special theory of relativity equates matter and energy. The relationship between matter and energy is so simply expressed in the equation you would all know, E equals mc squared. That means if we take an object that is stationary, the energy contained in the matter is equal to its mass times the speed of light squared. Mathematics has this uncanny ability to describe physical laws. Paul Davies suggests that the laws of nature are in code, and the language of the code is mathematics. Isn't it remarkable, though, that the universe's secrets are coded in a language that we understand? Einstein said the only incomprehensible thing about the universe is that it is comprehensible. Polkinghorne puts it well. He says, "We are so familiar with the fact that we can understand the world that most of the time we take it for granted. It is what makes science possible. Yet it could have been otherwise. The universe might have been a disorderly chaos rather than an orderly cosmos. Or it might have had a rationality that was inaccessible to us. There is a congruence between our minds and the universe, between the rationality experienced within and the rationality observed without." Some philosophers seize this idea that our thinking is congruent with the structure of the universe, and argue that the laws of nature don't really exist. Scientists just use their minds to impose rational patterns on the world. Paul Davies had no time for the idea that the laws of nature are purely human constructions, calling them arrant nonsense. Polkinghorne thinks it is much more plausible that the scientist does not invent laws, but really uncovers what's out there, what really exists. The world, he says, though ordered, is strange and subtle. Our powers of rational provision are pretty myopic and limited by the contingency of the way things are, existing independently of the way we think they ought to be. Another reason to trust this strange affinity between inward thought and the fabric of the universe is that mathematicians and scientists are often convinced of the verisimilitude of their theories precisely because the theory is mathematically beautiful. Indeed, Einstein proposed his mathematically beautiful general theory of relativity many years before evidence actually verified it. Paul Dirac, a distinguished quantum physicist who predicted the existence of antimatter, wrote, "It is more important to have beauty in one's equations than to have them fit experiment, because the discrepancy may be due to minor features which are not properly taken into account, and which will get cleared up with further developments in the theory." It really seems like mathematics, the most abstract and logical form of thought we humans possess, is the key to nature's secrets. It is written into the fabric of the universe, it seems. Paul Dirac said, "God is a mathematician of a very high order," and he used advanced mathematics in constructing the universe. So when we do science, we are, in Kepler's words, thinking God's thoughts after him. So not only is the structure of the universe rational, but the structure of our thought is strangely in tune with the rational frequency of the universe. It is the reason we can do science at all. The sheer existence of laws, the fact that the physical universe is rationally structured and intelligible, with laws that are written in the language of mathematics, this all calls for an explanation. Flew thought that the only viable explanation of the origin of the laws of nature is the divine mind. In this, he echoed the position of Einstein, who said, "The laws of nature manifest the existence of a spirit vastly superior to that of men, and one in the face of which we, with our modest powers, must feel humble." Flew has joined the position of the great scientists of the past, Copernicus, Galileo, Kepler, Newton, Faraday, Maxwell, Einstein, Planck, and Heisenberg, who all believed that the rationality of the universe has its source in God. Polkinghorne sums up, "The rational order that science discerns is so beautiful and striking that it is natural to ask why it should be so. It could find an explanation only in a cause that it was itself rational. This would be provided by the reason of the Creator, which establishes the common ground for the observed rationality of the world and the experienced rationality of our minds, guaranteeing their mutual coherence. This insight gains cumulative force if we widen our view beyond that of science to recognize that the world we know contains beauty, moral obligation, and religious experience too. These also find their ground in the Creator." This is where the idea of the rationality of the physical universe becomes a really dangerous idea. Surely there is no more dangerous idea than the idea that an illimitable superior intelligence is the source of the universe that is shot through with signs of mind. It is the agnostic scientists who say it. Once the agnostic scientists start speaking of the mind of God evident in the mathematical beauty of the cosmos, what is to stop other agnostics or reverent deists from discovering that deep rationality in the realm of values that Polkinghorne identified, in the realm of beauty and of moral goodness. The idea that deep reason, the idea of deep reason in the universe could apply to more than scientific rationality and extend to the reasonableness of beauty and the reasonableness of moral goodness. This idea is respectably multicultural. It is broadly deistic, not a specifically Christian insight. At most, it brings the culture back to the first line of the creed, the recognition of a creative mind behind all that exists. What an idea like this might do to our culture is lift the dead hand of materialism and nihilism, and that will have profound consequences. This idea could re-enchant the cosmos with mind and meaning and revive our tired culture. And once we acknowledge the first line of the creed, the second line becomes a more respectable question. As Anthony Flew said, what then do we make of claims of revealed religion? The question of whether the divine has revealed itself in human history remains a valid topic of discussion. You cannot limit the possibilities of omnipotence. Ideas have consequences. The rediscovery by agnostic as well as believing scientists of the idea of mind underlying the beauty and rationality of our physical world has implications for a renewed sense of meaning and therefore of purpose and even hope for our culture. Thank you.
That was Mr. Robert Van Ghent with Science and the Mind of God, a new springtime for the Christian view of cosmic history. This presentation was part of the Christopher Dawson Centre for Cultural Studies 2015 colloquium on the theme, Ideas Dangerous to Atheism. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.